Super Scoreboard. The Old Firm. Through the decades.
The Old Firm through the decades reaches the millennium. I'm Hugh Keevans. It would be fairer to call it the stranglehold. 33 competitions played in the first decade of the 21st century, 29 of them won by Celtic or Rangers. Hearts and Dundee United got a Scottish Cup each. Hibs and Livingston won the League Cup. Beyond that, Glasgow's Big Two had it all their own way, helped immensely by the goals of John Hartson, the Welsh Dragon, and Peter Lovenkrantz, the Danish destroyer. 54 goals in 182 appearances for Peter at Rangers. A remarkable 109 goals for Celtic in 201 appearances for John Hartson. Delighted to say they're with me today to look back on a period when Rangers and Celtic were dominant at home and both reached a European final as well. John Hartson, it was some decade for the pair of you.
Yes, it was. It was a When I joined Celtic in 2001, we went on to be quite successful. And prior to me getting there, of course, they won the treble in the year 2000. But of course, I didn't join until 2001. I was going into a fantastic dressing room, great, great players, a team full of internationals, and a wonderful manager in Martin O'Neill, who had success down south, of course.
Peter, before John got here, from down south, you had already played in an Old Firm game, the first one of Martin O'Neill's time at Celtic. I have to remind you, it was 6-2 for Celtic.
Yeah, I don't forget that one too much, to be fair. It was not the best of first taste of Old Firm for me. You know, I remember thinking Celtic went 3-0 up after about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And the Gatwickat told me to warm up. And I basically warmed up the whole game. Half-time, through the whole second half, and he keeps sending players down to put them on in front of me, and I kept warming up, and in the end I just stood down there and I watched the game, and he put me on, I think, the last couple of minutes. It was not a ideal game for me, the first experience of an Old Firm.
But the next game, Peter,
yeah,
Rangers won 5-1 against Celtic at Ibrox. That sums up just how unpredictable this fixture can be.
Yeah, it's very unpredictable, but also it was two good teams at a time, you know. It was some unbelievable dressing rooms in both clubs, so it was just a very even competition, you know, between the two teams. And you know, but them going beating us there at home 6-2, and we beating them 5-1 at home, they just showed you that there was not much in between the two teams.
When Peter speaks about two great dressing rooms, John, your dressing room, as well as including your good self, had the likes of Chris Sutton and Henrik Larsson. Did you ever see a better player than Henrik?
Well, he's a phenomenal player, but I've got to say, you know, I played with some great players before arriving at Celtic. I played with the great Dennis Bergkamp at Arsenal for 2 years. I played with Ryan Giggs and Mark Hughes and these type of players for Wales, for my national team. But Henrik was an absolute phenomenon. He really was. His goal scoring exploits, his record is off the scale, really. He was a wonderful, wonderful athlete, great teammate.
And down the left hand side, it's Thompson turning the ball into the middle. No takers though. The ball's still in play, and it's another goal for Celtic. It's Henrik Larsson again. The ball went beyond everyone, and Larsson come in on the far side and sent it high into the roof of the net.
He is certainly, you know, up there with one of some of the best players I ever played with. It's difficult, Hugh, because if I'm in Glasgow and I get asked this question at various events, if I'm in Glasgow or Scotland, I say Henrik. And if I'm in England or anywhere else, I say Dennis, just to keep on the side of it, on the right side of everybody. But no, they were inseparable. They were both world class. Dennis Bergkamp was incredible. And Henrik was, you know, I call him a freak of nature, because it's almost impossible to score the amount of goals, you know, 242 goals in 315 games. And, you know, that is just freakish. But he was a wonderful, wonderful striker for 3 seasons. We played together. And, you know, he's one of them players that I will always, as my life goes on, I'll be asked about how good he was. And yeah, my answer is always the same. He was world class.
I have to ask you, John, you and Peter could actually have been teammates, because as everyone recalls, you actually had a medical at Rangers before you ended up at Celtic. How do you reflect on that period now?
Well, everything happens for a reason. I've learned that in terms of experiences that I've gone through in my life, you know, with my cancer in particular. You know, I just feel that I was meant to live. I wasn't meant to die, because I should have died, because my prognosis was so bad. I'd had testicular cancer that spread to my lungs and onto my brain, and I had to have 60-odd sessions of chemotherapy. I feel very blessed to have come through that period. And I've gone on to raise over £1 million for the John Hartson Foundation. So we've been able to help so many other people in their battle, and different hospices and cancer hospitals and things like this, with our donations that we've been able to make to certain charities. So when I went for a medical at Rangers, I was very excited. I'd flew up in Sir David Murray's private jet from Cardiff. I was in the middle of a Welsh camp, and Mark Hughes came to see me and said, look, you can miss this weekend's game. I think it was Estonia away. You go and sort out your future. There's a bid come through. A telegram had come to the reception to say that Rangers were wanted to speak to John Hartson urgently. I phoned my dad. We flew up in the private jet. We arrived in Glasgow Airport 40 minutes later. I was ushered through to Ibrox. And then during the next half an hour, I was taken to a hospital in Glasgow for one scan on my knee. And then I came back. I'd already agreed terms with Mr. David Murray, of course, who was chairman at the time. Dick Advocat was manager. And I'd agreed terms. It was happening. All I had to do was just get one or two x-rays. I got them on my knee. I came back. I'm sat in a room with Mr. Dick Advocat, excited, obviously, because I'm joining a, you know, Rangers football club. I'd only been to Scotland once in my life. I didn't have any allegiances towards either club growing up in Wales. And next thing I know, the Dick Advocat's doctor came into the room and said, I'm very sorry, boss. We can't proceed with the deal. There's something showed up on John's knee that is preventing us from completing the medical. And I can't sign this off because it's, you know, it's his duty to call the medicals. He's a doctor. He's a professional. And the next thing, Dick Advocat's apologizing sincerely to me and saying, look, I really wanted you here. But I have to listen to my doctor. I have to go with my staff. 10 minutes later, I'm back on the plane and I'm back down to Swansea. That's literally what happened in a nutshell.
Jordan, we are delighted to hear that your health is good and you have survived everything. Does this help you to see football in a proper perspective?
Well, football to me, I always loved playing the game. I always loved enjoying, you know, I played on, kicked the ball around on the streets as a kid in that council house where I lived on the council estate in Swansea. And then I was one of the fortunate ones to be able to be offered an apprenticeship at 16 years of age. So I didn't have to go through all the college and get my qualifications in terms of getting another job. I was able to do something that I loved doing ever since I was a kid. Was very fortunate to have had that opportunity. And then my career then went from strength to strength. I progressed. I joined some huge clubs. I went for record transfer fees. But football now, for me, I enjoy working on football and things like that. But I've also now got different perspectives. I've got different priorities as well in terms of my children, my health. I've been very, very fortunate to have come through a life threatening illness which nearly took my life, and it does take many people's lives. So I count myself very, very fortunate. And it's football used to be absolutely the be all and the end all, but there's other things. There's my children's schooling, and two of my children, my daughter is living in Australia, she's traveling, she's only 21. My other son, who's 17, lives with his mother in South Wales. So it's family and it's perspective and it's the simple things now, you know, and it's, you know, I've been a pundit for the last 12, 13 years since I retired. So I don't know how long I'm going to want to be a pundit and how long I'm going to stay in this business, because there's other people coming through all the time. You know, there's a couple of thousand footballers retire every year. Most of them, a lot of them are looking to go into the media. Editors change, producers change, and they want to bring in their own people. And I've had a great run at it. I'm still working for Sky, and I do the odd bits and bobs with the Welsh TV. I'm down in North Wales on Wednesday covering the Bulgaria-Wales game. So there's more to life now than just getting up in the morning and going training and training hard and then concentrating on the game at the weekend. It was everything to me. I wanted to win. I wanted to compete. I wanted to be the best. But now, as you retire and other things and life changes and you go on, I've got a different perspective now, and I'm a lot more easier going in life. I love my family. I live in a little small village just outside Edinburgh. And all I want to do here is put food on the table for my kids, and hopefully they'll all stay healthy and successful in life and go on to do what they want to do. And that's how I am now. Whereas before it was football. It could take over your life, which is not a bad thing. You have to be like that when you're a footballer. You know, you have to just think of football, because that's what pays the bills. That's why, you know, fans come and see you. You have a duty to give everything you have while you're contracted to that club. And that's what I did for the best part of 17, 18 years. But now I'm out of the game. You know, I'm still in the game indirectly, if you like, working in the media. But you're absolutely spot on. I have got a different perspective now of the game to when I was playing it.
Peter, you arrived here from Denmark as a very young man. I would imagine moving into an environment that was literally alien to you. How did you adapt to Glasgow?
To be fair, I was also a bit fortunate, because 2 weeks before I signed for Rangers, my brother had signed for St Johnston. So I had my brother 50-minute drive away up in Perth, you know, and he's just had a wee boy. And he moved there with his wife. So every day after training, basically, I just drove up to him, and that kind of helped me settle in. And I had him for 3 years in Glasgow, so it made it a lot easier than people probably expect. They never really thought about that I had my actual big brother there to look after me and help me settle in. So.
How did you respond to the unique rivalry that is Celtic and Rangers?
John could probably back me up in this. I don't think you would experience anything like it unless you're actually in it yourself. You know, it's, you hear people talk about it, you hear other footballers talk about it, the clubs I've been at, but nothing compares to it. You know, everywhere I went since Glasgow, you know, I went to Schalke and they were like, oh, Dortmund, Schalke, the biggest derby. And I went, no, it doesn't even come close, you know. And then you go to Newcastle and it was Sunderland, and that was still a big derby. It was definitely, but it doesn't come close to the Old Firm. The Old Firm is beyond anything I've experienced and ever seen and all that as well. And like I say, you don't know how it is until you actually experience it yourself.
Swansea and Cardiff can get a bit tasty, John, but anything like Celtic and Rangers?
Well, I've been to several Swansea-Cardiff games, and obviously there's a lot of rivalry there. Biggest club in Wales, most successful club, this, that and the other. You know, and I stood on the terraces watching that game. And I had some sort of feel of what it meant to the Swansea supporters, being a Swansea fan. And that was the biggest game that you wanted to win all season. I'm not saying you wanted to lose all the others. Of course, you want to be competitive in every game and get as high up as the table as you can. But I got a perspective of what it means to the supporters. And it's a game for the supporters, this one. It's the bragging rights. It's having that sense of, you've won a massive game, and it's like a bolt of electricity that runs through the whole football club when you win a Celtic and Rangers derby. When you lose, it's like someone has pulled the plug on the club. Oh. It's not a nice place to go into. The atmosphere is down. It's low. You're low in yourself because you feel as if you've let the supporters down. This game is about the supporters. They want to win these games. And they're fantastic games. I agree with everything that Peter just said. They are a great experience. But the emphasis on winning these games is so important that outsiders have no idea what it means to win this particular football club and get them 3 points for your supporters.
You and Peter had a habit, very pleasant habit, of scoring winning goals in the derby matches. Do you remember, John, your first game against Rangers?
I do. It was at Ibrox and I scored a perfectly good goal and the linesman was too inept to give the correct decision. And he choked off what was a perfectly good goal for me. I think we drew the game 0-0, my first ever experience at Ibrox. And that was disappointing, obviously. But I think after three or four games, derbies, I started to enjoy them then, because what you find is that your big players, your first name on the team sheets, you've probably got about six or seven of them in each team that the manager wants to rely on. And the big players step up in these games. The big players have to control their nerves, control the dressing room, control the pace of the game, control, you know, deal with the crowd, the atmosphere, the abuse that is coming from the terraces, you know, the absolute furore of an atmosphere. The big players, the manager is counting on them to make it happen. And I was one of them big players in that Celtic dressing room, alongside the likes of Larson and Lennon and Thompson and Mialbi and these other guys, and Sutton, of course. So for me, I started to enjoy them then, because we started to get a little bit of success in these games. And once we started to get a bit of success and I started to get a few goals, your big players score in the big games. That's what they do. That's why they're on the big wages. That's why they cost a big fee in transfer fees. And the manager is looking at these players to bring in the other two or three players that are not quite maybe experienced as the others, the one or two that are playing their first game and all this sort of stuff. So once I started to get a feel for them, I don't know about Peter, but I genuinely then used to look forward to them. I thought they were great experiences. And I can say now I'm very fortunate as one of the players to have played in 20-odd derbies, the Glasgow derby, that I feel I can come away and say, well, do you know what? I enjoyed them. And that's because I was successful in them.
Oh. Peter, you once had the potentially life-changing experience of scoring the winning goal in a cup final against Celtic. How did that transpire?
I know who. I played in it.
Still,
I get sleepless nights over it.
John says he gets sleepless nights. I dare say you couldn't get to sleep simply through excitement and that sense of satisfaction.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was also the build-up to it. I remember, you know, I scored in the Celtic Park before it, drew one each. Scored in that, and that was not too far before that game.
And here come Rangers now. It's Lovenkrantz on the edge of the area, trying one, and it's in the back of the net. Just over a minute gone here, and a cartwheel from the Rangers player. What a start at Celtic Park. Lovenkrantz driving the ball forward, right over Douglas, into the back of the net. And here at Parkhead, it's Celtic 0, Rangers 1.
I remember going into it, I was so nervous. For some reason, I was so nervous, and funny story, I was sitting in the change room and when I get nervous, I yawned. So people think I hadn't slept the night before because I was sitting yawning, think I was tired. And I remember Barry Ferguson come up to me and he's like, what's up with you? So you know, sleeping last night? I was like, no, I said, I'm just a bit nervous. And he's like, you'll be fine. He says, and he just talked me into it and talked me into the game. And as soon as I went out, as soon as you came out and a warm-up was done and you went on the pitch, everything just went out the window and I was ready to go. Like I say, it's now doing bad. I don't know John's thing, but because he was on the losing side of it, it's probably different for him. But when I look at it, and I must think people from the outside who wasn't anything to do with Stirling Rangers, it must have been one of the best football games to have watched. You know, with how it went end to end. I think it was the most equal game you've seen in a long time. You know, it's, they went one up, we went one each, then they went 2-1, we came back to 2-2, and then winning the last minute. It was a very, very exciting and good football game to be part of, for also a neutral point of view, I would think, for the football world. But for me personally, you know, 22 years old scoring the winning goal against Celtic, I had no idea what I've actually done until probably after it, and you see years to come, and even now, it's still what everybody talks about, and you realise what you actually did back then was crazy.
What is the fan reaction both ways? How did that transform you in the eyes of the Rangers fans, and what did it do for you in the eyes of the Celtic fans in Glasgow?
Interestingly enough, you know, I had, because, like I said, I scored the part of goal at Parkhead and we drew one each. Before the cup final, I received a special letter, you would say, at the training ground, basically having a bullet inside and telling me not to, if I did score, I couldn't do my cartwheel. Uh-huh. And that would probably be my last and the rest of it. And so if you noticed, in the cup final when I scored, I didn't do the cartwheel in both goals. It was basically just... it went out the window. So it was, from both things, you know, it meant so much, you know. I had positive and negative things with it. Rangers fans, of course, it took to another scale with me, you know, from going from a young boy to really noticed to basically couldn't go anywhere without getting stopped and photos and autographs and fantastic. And Celtic fans was, of course, not too happy with me. I had a lot of abuse and... the rest. But to be fair, there was also a lot of Celtic fans, you know, that was great with me, you know, just, they were like, oh, honestly, hate you, but in a good way, you know, it's just like, you're a thorn in our sides, but they were dead nice about it, and they were just like, I wish you were with us, and you know, I mean, that's just what comes with it, but yeah, as a young age, you realise that it was something to get used to.
John, if people in England or Wales listened to Peter and his story there about a bullet in a letter sent to the training ground, they would think, no. That couldn't happen. But did you ever experience that side of life in the Glasgow goldfish bowl?
I was lucky who I never did. And I'm sorry to hear that, what happened there to Peter, because that must not have been nice at all. Not a very nice experience. No, I never got it, you know, as dramatic as, you know, as what that sounds, what happened to Peter. But listen, you get the verbals, and you know, I'm on social media now, and you have to put up with certain things and people say and things like that. But you know, the one thing that I took from, you know, scoring in the games against Rangers was, it's almost like you get the keys to one half of the city. You know, you adhere yourself to the Celtic fans forever. In terms of what it gives them, you know, and this is all over the world, and the Rangers fans are the same. You know, they're a huge club all over the world. You look at North America, Canada, New York, everywhere in Ireland, you know, everywhere you think of it, this game goes out to, I think it's 300 countries that watch this particular game, different times, obviously, of the day in relation to where you live. But I wouldn't say I was. I got it too badly in terms of abuse and everything else. But I think it's part and parcel of, you know, you can't score the winning goal against Rangers in a derby and expect the Rangers fans to buy you lunch the next day. it just don't happen like that, you know. So as much as you're revered and you're worshipped and loved by one half of the city, you know, there's not a lot of nice feelings towards you from the other half. And I think everybody who joins Celtic or Rangers has to appreciate and has to get that pretty early, you know, in their careers in Scottish football. You know, the fans are very volatile. And, you know, you've just got to deal with that side of it. You really have. This game is not for shrinking violets. You know, it's not for the faint-hearted. You've got to be strong mentally. You've got to be able to cope with certain things of your life. It's not like playing for Arsenal or Chelsea, where you can walk down the King's Road
and bump into Rod Stewart or Fayed or go to Harrods and all these superstars are in there. People walk past them. People see it all the time in London. You walk into Glasgow, and Peter would have experienced it. You've got people following you, chasing you, wanting your autograph. You walk into a restaurant, the chef comes out and says, look, Mr. Hudson, my son has got a picture of you on his bedroom wall. You don't have to pay for this meal. It's all on me. You know, so you get your luxuries and you get your pros and cons, but it's a very unique place to play your football for Celtic or Rangers, especially if you've had a long spell like I did. Stay long, it was only 5 years. But it's a unique place to play, and you've got to get used to that before you take it on. You know, some players come not aware. I wasn't aware of it. Certainly aware of it now, because I live in Edinburgh and I'm close to everything. But it certainly is. It's wonderful. It's a brilliant experience.
You, John, and Peter came at a time when there were two great managers operating in the city. Dick Advocaat at Rangers, Martin O'Neill at Celtic. Now, when Martin came to Celtic Park, it was like the coming of a king, John, if you remember. How unique a personality was Martin O'Neill?
He's certainly different, but he's very loyal. He's a very loyal man. If you played well for him and gave him everything, you wore the shirt the next game. And vice versa, if you didn't play for him and you weren't successful under him and you didn't perform the way that he expected you to, then he would quickly bring you out of the team. But if you did very well and he expected you to do the things that you could do and do them well, he never expected me to run the channels. That wasn't my game. That was Henrik's game. That was Craig Bellamy's game, to play on the shoulders of the defenders and run in behind. He knew I couldn't do that. He knew that wasn't my one of my assets on the field. My assets were be aggressive, controlled aggression, be a focal point for the team, get a hold of the ball. When the ball comes into you, get a hold of it for a couple of seconds to allow us to come up the pitch as a team. Get yourself in the box. You're an excellent finisher. You're a natural finisher. We have to supply you with crosses and balls into the box, and we've got players to do that. And that was my job, to do what I was good at, which was them assets that I had. And he knew Neil Lennon couldn't run in behind and do this and do that. But what Neil did was intercept, kept the ball, and he was wonderful in the dressing room. He glued us all together. When somebody wasn't having a good game, he'd either pat him on the back or give him a rollicking. He knew that Bobo Baldi's asset was to go and head the ball and be aggressive. JJ Agat was to get up and down the line and make sure that he got crosses in and he got back and defended. These are the things that managers expect from their top players. Oh. And he was fair. He was really fair with me. Remember, I'd failed 4 medicals before coming to Celtic. So Martin put a lot of faith in me. And obviously, I came back with 110 goals for him. So it was a brilliant relationship I had with Martin. I get on with him a lot more now, strangely enough, than when I played under him. Because he doesn't quite let you in. You don't really know his personality or what he's thinking or what he's going to do next. He keeps you on the outside, if you like, when you're playing under him. But now, of course, he comes and plays in my golf day every year. He comes and supports my charity lunch and everything. And I sit next to him now and we have a chat and we talk football, we talk old days and everything. But no, he's a wonderful manager. He's able to handle all the big egos. Very similar to Sir Alex Ferguson at Man United, when all sorts of different players come from different countries and some have got massive egos, some are quite humble. You have to deal with that. But no, nothing but an extraordinary man and a very successful manager to go with it.
Scoreboard, the Old Firm through the decades.